Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Sunday's UFC Fight Night 105 event, which takes place in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium bets for UFC 208 went 1-0 to profit 3.5 units overall. Our premium play was on Jermaine de Rondami in the main event at minus 130 odds. We also lost our one-unit free bet on the Silva-Brunson under 1.5 rounds total. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 105 features an 11-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a middleweight contest between Gerald Meerschaert, who is 25-8, and Ryan James, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Meerschaert minus 185, the comeback on James at plus 145. Immediately, action started coming in on Meerschaert at our sponsor sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, so make sure you guys check those guys out. But right now at Five Dimes, it's Meerschaert minus 335, the comeback on James plus 275. So a lot of respect coming in towards Meerschaert. If you look at the run that he's recently been on, I mean, he's one of these guys that's been basically a veteran of the sport for a long time. I mean, has faced decent competition throughout his whole career, and he's finally getting his opportunity in the UFC. And I mean, in his debut, he looked phenomenal. I mean, he won by choke over a very solid opponent in Gigliotti there. So I think that he looked nothing but impressive. But before that, if you look at his run, I mean, it seems to me like he's one of these vets that finally kind of come into his own. He's training at a good camp with Rufus Sport and Crew over there. He's got all that experience, and he's finally putting everything together, and his game has gotten to the point where he's pretty solid everywhere. I mean, this guy does have some good stand-up skill, obviously training with Rufus Sport, but beyond that, his wrestling's up to par right now. His submission game is off the charts, especially, you know, offensively. He's definitely a threat on the ground against most. I mean, again, his beautiful submission in his last fight shows that as well. Now, defensively on the ground, he is susceptible at times, but he's even tightened that up a little bit more as well. So he can be submitted, but his submission defense has gotten better as well. James, on the other hand, it was a bit of an unknown. I mean, a quality Canadian fighter. Again, he made his UFC debut recently, and I thought he looked pretty good. I think he looked a lot better, especially on the feet, than most people realize. James has a grappling background. He does have okay wrestling to go along with it, but once on the ground, the guy has a tremendous amount of submission skill. I mean, you're in trouble. You don't want to really tangle with him that much. So this is where the fight gets interesting, because James is a submission guy. Meerschaert's been winning most of his fights by submission. So first mistake here by either fighter, I think, is going to really be costly. So on the feet, though, again, I did say that James was a little bit better than we expected. Again, it's over Barish. His debut win was Barish. Might not be the most devastating striker, but he does have a little bit of power. And James, again, kind of held his own okay at times there. He did get clipped once in a while, but I think the power that Barish had on the feet, James showed some toughness by absorbing some of those shots, you know, not getting put away. And, you know, 35 years old for James is at the point where you start getting suspect about his chin, but it did at least look to be okay in that fight as well. And then beyond that, if you look at some of his other fights, he seems to be okay chin wise as well. So I think James is basically a younger 35. I mean, especially in MMA years as well. He doesn't have near the experience Meerschaert does. So this is going to be a pretty competitive matchup. I think it's going to be closer than most people realize, honestly, because they do match up relatively well. On the feet, I do give the edge to Meerschaert. But honestly, one thing that I question about Meerschaert is at times when he gets pressured and when there's an aggressive striker coming at him, he does kind of shy away from getting hit. Now, of course, nobody likes to get hit, but, you know, if he gets kind of shies away a little bit, gets stuck up against the cage. I expect this to be a very competitive back and forth type of decision with an eventual finish along the way, potentially if that does happen, because both these guys are finishers. So I know there's a good chance for that to happen, but there's also a chance that this fight hits the scorecards. And if it does, it could be very competitive. So I'm going to pick Mearshart to win because I do think right now, again, with all the experience and the background that he has, he's just a little bit ahead of Jaynes, but I wouldn't count Jaynes out.
Yeah, and I'm one of those people that doesn't think this fight's going to be that close. Jaynes and Mearshart are solid veterans and both are very talented fighters, but I have been so much more impressed with Mearshart's calm under pressure. I mean, his UFC debut, he was facing a very aggressive, very powerful young fighter, and he weathered the storm, wrapped him up, and got an impressive submission victory in the first round. Jaynes, on the other hand, he kind of got into a slugfest with Keith Barish, and I didn't think he looked that impressive. It's just he basically utilized his reach a little better, and Barish was swinging for the home runs the whole time, and Jaynes was able to just outwork him and win a decision. I mean, there really wasn't anything that impressive in that fight. This time around, I think this fight is going to have a lot of the bout take place on the ground. Either Mearshart is going to be in control with his savvy veteran grappling and pick up another win either by top position or submission, or Mearshart does actually have a history of being submitted. Now, granted, he hasn't been submitted in a long time. His last loss was to Sam Alvey. His last stoppage loss was way before that even. But in those losses, he actually has been submitted 7 times in his 8 career losses. Granted, all 7 of those losses happened a while ago, more than 4 years ago, but they did happen. And that is a bit concerning considering that Ryan Jaynes' biggest strength is his grappling. Now, Mearshart is a solid veteran, and he has improved drastically over the last couple years to earn this opportunity to compete in the UFC. And again, he looked way better in his UFC debut than Jaynes did. So I think just overall that Mearshart is the better overall fighter. And I think that even though Jaynes will be threatening with submissions, I think Mearshart can avoid him because he has improved that much that it's not as devastating to him to be put in submissions. And I think that Mearshart's the one that's putting the pressure on Jaynes, and he gets the victory here, either by decision or maybe submission. Now, moving on to the first bout on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a middleweight contest between Jack Marshman, who is 21-5, and Thiago Santos, who is 13-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up at Santos, minus 170, the comeback on Marshman at plus 130. Right now, over 5 dimes, it is minus 175 Santos. Marshman is at plus 155. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There is two-way action in this fight. Early on, it was Marshman. Right now, we're seeing a little bit more action on Santos coming in as well. So striker versus striker matchup. A lot of people are digging this matchup. I mean, it should be fireworks to say the least. Both these guys have knockout power on the feet, and both these guys usually prefer to stay striking and just display that. So it should be again, a really fun battle, scrap back and forth. So tough. I mean, Marshman coming in again, a little bit of momentum on his side. He fought a very, very game Seidenblad. I mean, Seidenblad was making some waves in the middleweight division for sure. And Marshman coming in, making his debut against a fighter like that and pulling off an impressive win like he did. I mean, he has a ton of power. He basically displayed in that fight what he does best, and that's knock people out. I mean, the guy has a tremendous amount of knockout power. He's got technical skill set on the feet, especially with his hands. He knows how to use them. Accuracy is there. Everything that you want to see in a fighter. He has got a tough chin overall too. He's been knocked out a few times in his career, but I think his chin's a little bit better than the 3 knockout losses that indicates really. And overall, I mean, he's just a warrior. He's one of these guys that's going to bring it. You know what to expect. He's got a little bit of wrestling. He's got some submission skill as well. I do like his guillotine chokes. I mean, you got to be careful with this guy if you're sticking your head in for a takedown. I mean, he could wrap around and just end things quickly around your neck there. So Marshman is a finisher. That's basically what he does. Now, Santos, you could say a lot of the same things about him. I mean, Santos has looked really good for a while now in the UFC, but unfortunately for him, he's ran up against a couple losses in a row. Now, Musasi, that loss, I mean, he just got destroyed. Musasi looked great in that fight. I mean, I was impressed, really, to say the least. I thought the fight would be a little bit tougher than it went, but obviously Musasi just dispatched Santos relatively quickly. So that was kind of a bad loss. I mean, the way he looked in that fight, at least, just getting dominated like he did, but against quality competition. I mean, Musasi's obviously a fight or two away from getting a title shot, so that's a different level than he's facing here against Marshman. But then he backed that up with a loss over to Spicely. Now, Spicely, very game ground fighter, as we all know. So the submission loss isn't exactly a shocker, but the way it kind of all happened. I mean, he didn't look that great on the feet in that fight, and then Spicely was eventually able to get him down and then do what he does best. So it just didn't look like the Santos we were used to seeing, the Santos that knocked out Mark Court, the Santos that beat Theodoro in a very impressive decision win, I thought. So it just – he had a setback. So I'm not sure what to think of this fight. I mean, if Santos shows up like he did in those fights like I just mentioned against Mark Court or Theodoro, he can definitely win this fight. I mean, he's got some physical advantages over Marshman in this fight. He's got those kicks that are just so nasty. I mean, if they hit you in the body, obviously he can knock you out with a head kick as well. It's just hard to deal with that length and that really the striking of Santos, how he mixes everything up as well. But if anybody could do it, it's a fighter like Marshman. Marshman, again, a good savvy striker in his own right. He's got a ton of knockout power, and I think that he can get comfortable enough and adapt enough that he gets around that reach a little bit and possibly land. So I don't know. I've been going back and forth on this fight. I could realistically see it playing out either way. I guess I'll go a little bit more towards Marshman. I think I just like the momentum he has, the confidence that he has coming in. He's faced a tall fighter, obviously, in Seidenblatt, a different type of fighter. But I think that reach, again, he'll eventually adapt, and he'll basically be able to kind of figure out the timing and then close a distance and probably land one of those bombs and knock Santos out. So going back and forth, but right now I lean a little bit more towards Marshman.
This fight is really close, and honestly, I was going to go Santos, but there's been a couple extenuating circumstances that have actually changed my mind a little bit. First off, Santos going all the way up to Canada. This is actually his first time ever seeing snow, and they actually had some trouble with their plane coming in, and he's actually going to have to cut a little bit extra weight to make the 185-pound limit this time around. So I expect him to still make weight, but just, you know, sapping yourself that little bit extra is always tough on the body, tough on the head, and it could just make you that much more susceptible to a loss come fight night. Now, in terms of chin strength, I think even though both guys have been knocked out or dropped and hurt in fights, I think Marshman actually is a little bit physically tougher and can take a shot a little bit better. You saw that in his UFC debut. I mean, Seidenblatt was landing some good shots at distance, and then Marshman just battered himself through those shots and then got inside and landed some monster bombs and then was able to pick up the win. And I think that's kind of what he's going to have to do here. Now, obviously, Santos is a better striker than Magnus Seidenblatt. Santos has just devastating kicks both to the body and the head. So Marshman, even though he does have a good chin, he can't just absorb those. He needs to either get out of the way or close the distance so that the kicks are not effective. Santos isn't quite as devastating with his punches. So if Marshman can get into boxing range, I think that this really becomes a scrap and Marshman can make things interesting. And the fact that Marshman is a much better grappler. You saw Santos has had some issues on the ground. Mutant Ferreira was able to submit him very easily in his UFC debut. Granted, that was after he got dropped. But then Eric Spicely just completely dominated Santos on the ground. So if Marshman can get this fight to the floor, even though he's not particularly an amazing grappler, he could just control it and win. Or he, as Nick mentioned, that guillotine's pretty nasty, and he could pull off a victory there. So with all that being said, I'm going to side with Jack Marshman. I think that he can close the distance. I think he can get inside, and he can either box up Santos on the inside or potentially win this fight on the floor. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Ayman Zahabi, who is 6-0, taking on Reginaldo Vieira, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Ayman Zahabi minus 165, the comeback on Vieira at plus 125. Right now it's Zahabi minus 230, Vieira is at plus 190. So hype train around Zahabi is legit, but at the same time, I can understand. I mean, obviously Faraz Zahabi's brother, younger brother, making his UFC debut, so coming from an outstanding camp with – if there's any kind of special treatment or special like attention being paid to a fighter, it's going to be in this case, obviously, with his brother being the head trainer there and all the tools and fighters and everything that he can kind of draw together to help his brother become a better fighter. He is definitely utilizing. So Zahabi has a ton of potential. And if you look at his fights right now, he's undefeated at 6-0. Level competition isn't really the greatest. But if you look at how he fights, obviously he's got a striking background. That's to be expected. and he's good at what he does. I mean, the guy has clean technique on the feet. He's got good boxing, mixes in kicks well. He's got power on the feet as well to go along with some accuracy. It's impressive that obviously he's worked on his ground game. I mean, with the TriStar and all the beasts that they have over there, they're going to have a variety of training partners. So he's got his wrestling to the point where it's actually not bad. I mean, I do enjoy watching his takedown game, which consists basically, I think, for the most part, of getting those body lock kind of trip takedowns. But once he's on top, he knows how to utilize control, good ground and pound. He looks for submissions as well. So he's pretty well-rounded, to say the least. His takedown defense looks to be solid. So he's just a well-rounded, pure MMA fighter making his UFC debut with a lack of experience against quality competition. I mean, that's the only hiccup here. Vieira is going to be the best fighter Zahabi's faced thus far. So it's not exactly going to be an easy fight for him, at least I think. We'll see how he looks, obviously. But Vieira, getting into him a little bit, obviously he's an Ultimate Fighter winner. The guy actually has pretty good skill set everywhere as well. He's got a power on the feet. He doesn't have a lot of knockouts. So, I mean, he doesn't have any knockouts, I think, officially. But if you look a little bit closer, his striking's not bad. He did get picked apart, though, unfortunately for him, in his last fight a little bit. He started getting dominated on the feet. He got rocked on the feet a few times before he got choked out. So he is susceptible to getting hit by longer fighters. That's exactly what Zahabi is here as well. But overall, his stand-up's not awful, especially for, you know, a kind of a smaller guy at 135 pounds. I mean, I shouldn't say small and like strength-wise. I mean, he's not the tallest guy at 135 pounds, put it that way. But that being said, he has good wrestling to go along with an okay striking game. And then once on the ground, again, he has a good submission game offensively to go along with it as well. So he could do some damage underground. He could get the fight to the ground against most people in most cases. And then he does have a dangerous submission game to go along with it. So this is going to be the best test that Zahabi's had so far, but it's hard not to pick against him. I mean, especially after we saw Vieira get tagged like he did against Beltran, I think Zahabi is even a better striker than Beltran is, and I think he's going to inflict more damage along the way. So I understand it, but still, Zahabi needs to get tested, and I need to see it. I need to see him compete against a guy that's going to be relentless on the takedown, a guy that could get top position possibly on him and avoid getting submitted and doing some damage there. So we'll see how it plays out, but I think the hype could be very legit, like I said, against Zahabi. I know the people out there agree with it, and they're betting him as so. So let's see what he's made of. I am going to pick him to win, though, and I expect some good things out of him.
Yeah, Zahabi's entering this fight with a decent amount of hype. Obviously, when you're the brother of one of the best trainers in MMA, Firas Zahabi, that's got to help. I mean, he's getting elite training, and there's really no better way to prepare for your UFC debut than to work with a guy that has trained George St. Pierre and Rory McDonald and Robert Whittaker and just you name it, a lot of really, really talented fighters on the UFC roster. So Zahabi, even though this is his UFC debut, I think he's going to be one of those few fighters that doesn't get UFC jitters. And Reginaldo Vieira, I mean, he is not that impressive overall as a fighter. He has a decent submission game. He has a decent striking game, but he is not great off of his back. He is not that great defensively. He doesn't have a great chin. And Zahabi is pretty talented in just about every area. So I expect that he's going to come out here aggressive. I think he can be dangerous with his hands, his feet, and on the ground. So Vieira basically has no real safety net in this fight to fall back into, because I think Zahabi has him beat just about everywhere. But like Nick mentioned, he hasn't really been tested against elite competition. And again, I don't think that test is even going to happen here. I think Vieira is about bottom of the food chain in terms of bantamweights on the UFC roster. So I don't think he'll even get that first test in this fight. I think Zahabi blows through him. I think UFC is setting up this fight for Zahabi to look good, a local Canadian kid getting a win on Canadian soil in front of Canadian fans in Canada. So I really do think Zahabi doesn't just win this fight, but wins it impressively. Now, moving on and dropping down to the strawweight division, we have former champion Carla Esparza, who is 12-3, taking on Randa Marcos, who is 6-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up at Esparza, -210, the comeback on Marcos at +160. Right now, it's Esparza coming in at -300. The comeback on Marcos is +250. some spots out there have, looking at the Don Best screen, about minus 285. There's even a minus 270. So just under 3-1 is the market price out there, but it has been gotten bet up, like I just mentioned, and people are betting Esparza here. Former champion and honestly one of the most talented ladies at 115 pounds for sure. I mean, we all know that she's an extremely talented fighter, especially utilizing her wrestling. That aspect of her game is hard to beat. I mean, she has success against most in that area. So Esparza has developed her boxing to the point where she could be effective on the feet as well. And she just has a pretty complete overall game, but against fighters that can sprawl or and brawl against her style, obviously like the champion, the current champion, Jacek, that took her strap. I mean, that's not going to be a successful formula for Esparza. So she can get outstruck on the feet. She can get beat up as far as that goes as well. So she needs to implement her takedown game and kind of control the fight and work her ground and pound a little bit, even look for a possible sub in most fights. And that's the case here against Marcos as well. Marcos has been a really talented fighter. She's been up and down in her career so far, which is unfortunate for her because, man, she has all the tools to be a really excellent fighter and potentially challenge for a title. I mean, that's what a lot of people are thinking out there. So Marcos on the feet, her boxing is actually improving. I mean, you see she's able to have some success on the feet against in most fights, against most opponents. I mean, she can definitely have some success against Esparza here in this matchup on the feet. And then on the ground, her wrestling is not bad. She can get some takedowns. She has nice throws to go along with it as well. And she has a pretty good submission game, especially offensively. So Marcos is, again, a well-rounded fighter that could do pretty much everything. She just at times does slow down as the fight progresses and at times, I think it tends to make, I don't know, some mistakes, positional mistakes. She might get caught in a bad position, maybe on her back or whatnot. Her takedown defense is solid. It's okay, but she can get put on her back and controlled a little bit there as well. So her cardio and, again, her control in the cage sometimes is questionable, and that is a little bit of a concern, especially with the fighter against like Esparza that's going to look to implement just that. She's going to look to implement the cage control and try to kind of grind. Esparza is going to grind Marcos out is what I'm trying to spit out here. But it might not be as easy as everybody thinks. I think Marcos is going to show up here and be game. And if she doesn't spend the majority of her time on the canvas with her back against the floor here, she's going to probably do okay. I think that she can outstrike Esparza. She could be a little bit more dangerous and effective on the feet. And then even her submission game could give Esparza some fits as well. But I think ultimately it's going to come down to Esparza's control. And I think she's probably going to do enough to edge out a decision win. So I am going to pick Esparza to win because of what she does best, utilizing her wrestling skill. But I do think another competitive matchup is what we're in store for here.
Both girls are talented on the ground, but clearly Carla Esparza is better. She just has some of the best wrestling out of all the women in MMA, not just the women's strawweight division. Esparza has utilized her wrestling to get pretty much all of her wins so far in the UFC. Most recently, she out-grappled Juliana Lima, who is a talented grappler in her own right. Esparza dominated Rose Namajunas on the ground to win the title. She just knows what she's doing on the floor. She was able to kind of tear through the ladies on the Ultimate Fighter season, and Carla Esparza is just a very, very good top control grappler, and she is capable of posturing up and doing some damage from top position, and she can work for submission. So realistically, I think Randa Marcos is in huge trouble if this fight goes to the floor. That being said, Marcos is a pretty good wrestler herself, and if she's going to be able to win this fight, she needs to use her wrestling in reverse, and she needs to turn this into a boxing match. She is not going to win a ground fight with Esparza. Marcos, she knows what she's doing on the floor, but I just don't see her getting a submission. I don't see her reversing Esparza for any extended period of time. Marcos is the better striker though. So if she can somehow keep this fight standing, if she can stuff the takedowns like Joanna Jędrzejczyk did, then Marcos has a chance. It's just all about avoiding the ground. And again, even though Marcos is good on the ground, she's just not as good as Esparza. So overall, I think this fight, how it's going to play out is Esparza is going to get a lot of takedowns. I think she stays in top position. I don't think she finishes Marcos, most likely, but I think it's a similar fight to Juliana Lima, where Esparza was facing somebody that has a good ground game, and she doesn't want to create a lot of space looking for to pursue a finish, and instead she just kind of lays and prays it a little bit and tries to just stay active enough to keep the fight on the ground. So I think this fight is going to go Carla Esparza's way, probably by decision. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Nordine Taleb, who is 11-3, taking on Santiago Ponzinibbio, who is 24-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Ponzinibbio, minus 265, the comeback on Taleb at plus 185. Right now, it is Ponzinibbio minus 420. The comeback on Taleb is plus 335. So I was giving Taleb a little bit of respect. I think he deserves it. I mean, he's kind of been one of these underrated fighters throughout his career that is solid, again, everywhere and every aspect of the game. But I think doesn't get the kind of recognition that he deserves. I mean, at times it's because he's defensively flawed a little bit, hittable on the feet, of course. Outside of that, he's not bad. I mean, again, wrestling's okay. His striking is okay as well. He could be very active at times and very precise with his power as well to go along with it. So he can finish fights on the feet. I mean, he does have knockout power. If you look back at his last fight against Eric Silva, actually, he was an underdog in that spot as well, but came through with a pretty impressive knockout win. So he has that kind of potential on the feet. He's not bad. He's no slouch at all. Like I said, he has actually a wrestling game to go along with it. Unfortunately for Taleb, it's just a tough matchup against Ponzinibbio because I think he's not going to be able to utilize his wrestling in this fight here against Ponzinibbio. And Ponzinibbio is by far the better striker, the more dangerous striker overall as well. So if this does turn into a striking matchup, which it should, Ponzinibbio has just looked better and better. I mean, he's definitely one of the elite strikers right now at 170 pounds. So I expect that to continue here. Taleb probably is going to want to try to take this fight to the floor, slow it down a little bit, maybe pin Ponzinibbio up against a cage and just try to make this an ugly type of fight. But I don't think he's going to have a lot of success doing so. So I am going to go with Ponzinibbio. Again, it's kind of stylistically a bad fight for Taleb. That's why everybody's betting Ponzinibbio in this spot. I think where the line is now is getting a little bit out of hand, though. I do think that it's tough to kind of go in on Ponzinibbio at minus 400 over Taleb because Taleb is better than that line indicates right now. But overall, it's hard not to pick Ponzinibbio in this fight because I do see what most see out there, and he is the better striker, and it should stay upright. So if that's the case, Ponzinibbio should win.
Yeah, honestly, I think this fight's going to be a bit of a walk in the park for Santiago Ponzinibbio. Nordine Taleb is dangerous. He showed it in his last fight with that knockout of Eric Silva, but he hasn't fought in a while. He was supposed to fight this past June or this past July, and he got hurt. So he's been basically on the mend for a few months and hasn't fought in almost a year. And Santiago Ponzinibbio has really just been tearing through the welterweight division. The wins over Court McGee and Zach Cummings particularly were very impressive. I mean, he has looked dangerous right now. I mean, this is a guy that has excellent striking skills, has great power, great volume, and he can just take the fight to you. Now, if Taleb is going to win the fight, he's probably going to need to do something like mix it up and probably get away from the striking because I just think Ponzinibbio is way better on the feet than Taleb. Ponzinibbio did have a little bit of trouble with Ryan LaFlair in his UFC debut, so there is a possibility that Taleb could get something going, but Ponzinibbio also improved drastically with his takedown defense and was able to completely shut down Sean Strickland when he fought him. So I honestly think that Ponzinibbio has come a long way, and I just don't see a path to victory here for Nordine Taleb. I honestly think this is going to be an easier fight for him than his last two fights. So I expect Ponzinibbio to win and win impressively, probably by finish. Now moving on to the main card, we have Paul Felder in a lightweight contest, who is 12-3, taking on Alessandro Ricci, who is 10-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Felder, minus 285, the comeback on Ricci at plus 205. Another spot where the favorites are getting bet. Felder minus 400, the comeback Ricci plus 325 right now over at 5dimes.eu. So more love coming in on Felder. Again, stylistically, I understand it somewhat because I do think that Felder is the better fighter of the two. He's got more experience. He's faced quality competition. So in a way, this is a step down for Felder in the 155-pound division for sure. I mean, he's faced, again, better competition, more highly ranked competition as well. So this is a type of fight that's kind of dangerous for Felder to take. He is coming in on short notice. I should mention that as well, about a few weeks out or whatnot. Should be in fairly decent shape, though, and Felder always does come to fight, and he does always stay kind of prepared as well. So I don't expect it to be a huge issue for Felder with the short notice. And stylistically, this should be a pretty good fight because you should be able to outstrike Ricci on the feet here. But that is where it gets a little bit interesting because Ricci, I think, is a pretty decent striker in his own right. I think he's going to probably be able to hang in there with Felder, probably more than the people estimate at this point, because Felder, if anything, I mean, his strike defense at times is a little bit suspect, especially at this level. I mean, when you're facing some of the best strikers in the UFC, especially lightweight, which Felder has been in there amongst those guys, it's probably going to look not as great as it can be at times with your defense. But that being said, Ricci, I think, is a better striker than most people think. He does have a little bit of power to go along with it. So I expect a kind of back and forth type of matchup here as far as the striking exchanges go. But I do give the edge to Felder, so he should win on the feet here. I think as far as wrestling goes, Ricci might try for some takedowns. I think he's going to get stuffed there, though, and Felder's just going to be able to keep the fight upright as well and probably control this fight as a whole, meaning that if he's going to outpower or outmuscle anybody, if anybody's going to get outmuscled here, it's probably going to be Felder being the bully over Ricci along the way as well. Now, this is in Canada. Ricci is going to have the crowd behind him for sure. And again, I don't want to make it sound like Ricci isn't a good fighter. He actually is a very solid fighter, and I think he's – I don't know if I want to say prospect, obviously, at age 34, but in his MMA career – he's young enough and he's developing his skill set, and he's a promising fighter that's coming out of Canada. Honestly, he's way better than I think most people are probably expecting, considering he lost his UFC debut. He did take it on short notice as well to Jeremy Kennedy, so you got to give him a little bit of credit there. And Kennedy, man, that guy's really good. Now, the problem there is, though, that Kennedy's actually a featherweight, and he took that fight and he stepped up to lightweight in order to do so and to get his UFC debut in. So Ricci's facing a real legit lightweight here that's a strong and big lightweight as well. So that's where it's going to be a little bit different. So I do expect Felder to win this fight, but I'm another spot where I think it's going to be a lot more competitive than people realize. Ricci's going to be able to hang with Felder. And I also think the scorecards are going to be tricky here because it is in his backyard. And I think the judges, as we all know, you can't trust them. I mean, they're awful at times. They don't even know what they're looking at out there. And now with the new scoring criteria changing in some places as well, or in most places, obviously, that's a wild card you have to throw in. So crazy with the judges right now. I mean, you can never really tell, but I think the hometown crowd behind Ricci is going to make this thing a little bit closer than it even might be. So with all that being said, I'm picking Felder to win, but there is no way I would lay that kind of juice out there. So this is one of those caution points that I would say do not lay 4-1 in this matchup over a tough, solid fighter, probably underrated fighter like Ricci. I think it's one of those spots where you pass at this point with this line, but you watch it and it should be a pretty interesting fight and a pretty fun fight, hopefully, to watch. So my pick is Felder, though.
Honestly, when I first looked at this fight, I thought Paul Felder easy. Ricci in his UFC debut, even though Jeremy Kennedy is super talented, he's a featherweight, and Ricci still lost to him. That being said, Ricci's primarily a striker, and Paul Felder, while he is a striker and he's a diverse one with great kicks and a lot of crazy spinning attacks, Felder has had trouble with strikers in his UFC career so far. You look at right now, he's 4-3 in the UFC. All three losses were in the stand-up, where he lost either a decision or a doctor stoppage most recently. So, and every single time he was facing somebody that had really good striking fundamentals. Edson Barboza was just able to outflash him with a fun extended striking battle. Ross Pearson got inside on him and outboxed him, and Felder really had no answer for it because he didn't have enough space to do a lot of his crazy attacks. And then Francisco Trinaldo, that fight was pretty even, but Trinaldo, again, was able to get inside, land, do some damage, open up a cut, doctor stoppage. So all three of those losses were against good strikers. And then the Darren Cruikshank win, he was losing that fight, probably lost the first two rounds to Cruikshank, and then he actually went to the ground and used his ground game to beat Cruikshank. in the third round. So really interesting that even though Felder is a talented striker and with a diverse skill set and a lot of great powerful kicks and spinning attacks, that when he faces actual strikers, he gets himself in a bit of trouble. So I know this sounds crazy, but Alessandro Ricci is a really talented striker, and if Paul Felder gets into an extended striking battle with him and doesn't mix it up, maybe even go for some takedowns, I think there's a really good chance he loses this fight. So call me crazy, but now that I'm looking at it, I really do think that Paul Felder loses this fight. So I'm going to go Alessandro Ricci. Now moving on to the women's 135-pound division, we have Sarah McMahon, who is 10-3, taking on Gina Mazzani, who is 4-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA Odds Breakers perspective on this one?
I open McMahon -380, the comeback on Mazzani at +260. Right now, another spot that got bet up, -550 for McMahon, and the comeback on Mazzani is +425. So this card does definitely have more high favorites on there than we're used to, especially as of late. Last card had a few as well, but it seems like this is kind of almost a throwback card where you're going to see some big numbers out there. And this is another one. This is one of the highest favorites on the board here with Sarah McMahon. I mean, obviously she's a very talented fighter, very popular amongst the MMA hardcore fans out there. They know what she brings to the table. A tremendous wrestling. I mean, she has probably the best pure wrestling in the whole division, obviously. Once she gets on top, she could grind you out. Has a little bit of ground and pound. If she doesn't get top position, her striking is not bad. It's not like she's totally out of her realm in the striking game. Her boxing is actually developing pretty decent. It's just she isn't, you know, a young gun anymore. She's 36 years old, so she's getting a little bit older. She's getting a little bit to that point where you got to start being concerned, you know, as far as chin goes a little bit, because she has been getting tagged in fights. Obviously, she got stopped by Nunes as well recently, so that doesn't fare well, but she did lose to the champion. So, and again, that was basically by getting rocked and then getting choked out by Nunes there. So that's not really what she's going to have to face here against Mazzani. Mazzani's a very talented fighter in her own right. She's not getting that much respect at the betting window right now because of her loss, honestly, on the Ultimate Fighter. She's an Ultimate Fighter veteran, and she faced Juliana Pena to get, you know, as far as her first fight goes in the house, and she ended up losing. And she not only lost, she lost pretty convincingly on the cards, and a lot of it was because she got put on her back, got grinded out. Now on the feet, she also got outstruck a little bit along the way, and she just looked bad in that fight. It was not her best performance. But if you look beyond that, some of her performances, she's actually a better fighter than she showed in that matchup. I mean, she has a wrestling background in her own right. She also has a boxing background to go along with it. So her hands aren't really that bad. Again, she's better than what she showed in that Ultimate Fighter house. So I think that's why everybody's kind of fading her. They're thinking, man, if Pena was able to do what she did against Mazzani, I think McMahon is going to be able to repeat that. And it could be that type of matchup. I mean, for sure, McMahon obviously has more experience at this point in her career as well against quality competition. And she's going to come in with that game plan to kind of grind out Mazzani here. So I expect another somewhat competitive fight, honestly. If Mazzani, again, doesn't get really dominated and get put on her back, I think her hands are going to test McMahon a little bit on the feet, possibly. If she shows some of what I've seen her potential be, especially since she's been training the last couple of years since that show, she hasn't really been the most active fighter, obviously, either. But that being said, I think she's gotten better than what she showed on the show, and I think that she has a skill set to make this a tough fight. Now, will it be? I don't know. McMahon might go in there and just make it look easy, but I'm expecting Mazzani to show a little bit of life and show up a little bit better than most people think. Now, she is taking this fight on short notice as well, so that could be something, but I think she's going to show up in decent shape and obviously take her opportunity in the UFC and make the best of it. So if that's pulling off a huge upset win over McMahon, obviously, that's a good thing for her, but overall, it's hard to go against a -500 favorite at this point as far as a pure pick goes, so I'm going to pick McMahon to win. She's looked okay recently. She's bounced back. I think she needed to bounce back after her performances against Nunes and even Tate. I think she needed to have a couple fights back-to-back and kind of get herself that respect factor back and maybe not be on that radar of past it type of fighters where everybody kind of thinks, ah, she's done, stick a fork in her. She's not going to ever amount to anything. At least she's put together two quality wins, and she's kind of making another run to a potential title shot at 135 pounds. So I think this is another win for her, but I think Mazzani is probably going to be a little bit better than most people think here as well. So McMahon is my pick. I just hope it's a somewhat competitive fight at least.
Yeah, Sarah McMahon was supposed to face Liz Carmouche, and props to Gina Mazzani for stepping in when Carmouche had to pull out. But, man, I think this is a really tough fight to be making your UFC debut in. I thought that Sarah McMahon was going to have a little bit of trouble in her last fight against Alexis Davis, someone who had a very good ground game, and McMahon just tore right through her. It was so impressive. It really looks like she's taken her game to the next level, and honestly, she could be somebody to look out for if she can continue to grow and develop, especially with her top control game, because that was about as good as her top control has looked in the UFC. Now, Mazzani is a well-rounded fighter. She has pretty good wrestling, pretty good striking. I definitely think that she's capable of doing some damage in the women's division, and she's worthy of making an appearance in the UFC, but man, it's a tough fight to be making against a former Olympic wrestler in your UFC debut. Now, if Mazzani has a shot, I think she's going to have to crack McMahon on the feet, because I don't see her out-wrestling McMahon. That's just crazy talk. And McMahon has been hurt on the feet a couple times, most particularly against Amanda Nunes, when Nunes really blasted her, and then that set up a finish on the ground with a submission. So if Mazzani has any chance whatsoever, she needs to catch McMahon before McMahon gets inside on her and dumps her on her back. But I just think that that's too unrealistic. So overall, I just think McMahon wins this fight either by decision or stoppage on the ground. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Elias Theodorou, who is 12-1, taking on Cesar Mutanch Ferreira, who is 12-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Theodorou -165, the comeback on Ferreira +125. Ferreira getting all the love. He's now favored at -125. Theodorou is +105. So again, needless to say, the action came in on Ferreira here in this spot. Theodorou, my, how things have changed with him. I mean, honestly, he was a popular fighter. A lot of people expected some really good things from him winning the Ultimate Fighter and then winning some fights in the UFC after the fact. I mean, especially wins like Bruno Santos. Might not look impressive right now against Santos, but at that time, it was a pretty impressive win because Santos's style, the type of grinder he is. Theodorou looked pretty good in that fight. And then, of course, Narvaez, he ended up looking really good in that fight as well. He had getting finished Narvaez out there when Narvaez was doing pretty good. But you can look back now and say, hey, those weren't even that great wins, obviously. But his loss against Diego Santos was pretty bad. A lot of people were expecting him to even come away with that fight. Now, again, you got to give Santos credit because he showed up and he did what he had to do. He made Theodorou look bad because of how good he looked in that fight. But again, his stock dropped. Santos's stock definitely dropped in that fight. And then to follow it up with a pretty solid and impressive win over Alvey, well, I shouldn't say impressive win. I'll take that back. A pretty solid win over a guy like Sam Alvey, because Alvey, I mean, you get a win like that on your resume, it's always going to be pretty good, but he just wasn't impressive in doing so. I think he lost a lot of fans' respect in that fight as well, even though he won. So Theodorou really needs to come back out here, I think, and put on a show and maybe get rid of Ferreira and just get him out of there, which he possibly can. I mean, that's one reason I'm kind of leaning his way, to be honest with you, in this spot, because if anything you could say negative about Ferreira, his chin is pretty bad. Now, he has been surviving recently and he's looked pretty good, and his skill set is definitely solid. I mean, Ferreira is good offensively on the feet. He's got power. He can finish people on the feet. His wrestling is underrated. I mean, in most cases, he out-wrestles almost every one of his opponents. His takedown defense is legit. I don't think he's ever been taken down, if I recall, in the UFC. So he's got the wrestling. He's got powerful striking on the feet. He can finish you. And he also has a sick guillotine choke, and he's got submission ability as well. So Ferreira is a very complete fighter. It's just the fact that he does tend to slow down a little bit as a fight goes. Not that he can't go three rounds and win a decision, but he doesn't look the same as a fight goes a little bit. I mean, I have noticed that, like most fighters tend to do at times, but more so than that, I mean, his chin is that bad. Now, again, I'm giving him a little bit of credit because against Hermanson, he managed to not get knocked out. Against Smith, he managed to get knocked out. Against Mangbozi, which was a lot of people were expecting him to get knocked out in that fight, he didn't either. So he's got three solid wins in a row, and his chin's held up in those wins. And that's the case with Ferreira. If his chin holds up, I think in most cases against most middleweights, he's probably going to win that fight. And that could be the case here because, again, wrestling is going to be interesting here. Theodorou is actually a pretty well-rounded guy in his own right. He's pretty strong. He has decent wrestling, but he can be outgrinded in fights. Obviously, Santos proved that as well. So I think Ferreira is going to try to do that. I don't know how well he's going to play around on the feet or how long he will do that against Theodoro. I think he's going to look to kind of slow this fight down and kind of grind out Theodoro. But I think Theodoro is going to be more than prepared. I think he's got kind of a point to prove. And again, his popularity amongst the regular MMA fans out there, I think he wants to kind of show that he is what they once thought and he is a legit prospect that is going to get better and amount to something. So he's got something to prove here, and I think he's going to get it done, honestly. I just – stylistically, I think he's going to be able to probably stay off his back against Ferreira, and I think even if he's – it's a competitive fight that he's losing. I think eventually he catches that chin of Ferreira, and Ferreira gets back to losing fights the way he does, and that's by knockouts. So I do pick Theodoro here. I'm going to go against the grain. I think Theodoro bounces back and actually has an impressive performance, unlike his last few fights, and reverse that for Ferreira. I think Ferreira is finally going to kind of come back to reality a little bit, and that chin's going to show back up here. So I'm going to pick Theodoro to win his fight, and I think he's going to do it by knockout.
The chin is always going to be an issue with Cesar Ferreira, but Elias Theodoro isn't exactly a world beater of a striker. He really has not impressed me whatsoever with his stand-up. I know that he knocked out Roger Narvaez, but that was more because Narvaez was slowing down and getting gassed after Narvaez actually started really strong against Theodoro. Mutanch is a really talented and well-rounded fighter. It's just his drawback has always been that if he gets cracked really hard, I mean, he goes down and he goes down badly. Against Elias Theodoro, though, I just have not ever been impressed with his stand-up. It just seems a lot like he's half-assing a lot of his strikes with where he's kind of committing to a kick, but he doesn't really pack a lot of heat behind his punches. I think Ferreira might even be able to survive getting hit with a clean shot. Ferreira has really kind of embraced that he doesn't have very good durability, and he's been fighting a lot smarter. He's been looking to get fights to the floor. He's been looking to get top position on the ground and then dominate his opponents there. You saw it against Bengbose. You saw it most recently. Ferreira just has taken his game up a notch, and he's putting himself in positions where he's not going to be eating a lot of shots and taking much damage. So, and Theodoro, I don't think he's a huge threat with his power. So, granted, Theodoro does have a pretty good grappling game. He showcased great wrestling during his run on The Ultimate Fighter, but we haven't seen a lot of great wrestling out of him since. He's kind of fallen in love with his striking a little bit, and it hasn't been that impressive. As Nick mentioned, yeah, he beat Sam Alvey, but that was not a very entertaining fight. There were not many strikes thrown. Neither guy did much of anything. It's just more that Theodoro threw a few more strikes than Alvey did. Alvey just sat back and was just waiting and waiting and waiting for opportunities that never really presented themselves. And meanwhile, Cesar Ferreira is on probably the best run of his UFC career. I really think that win over Jack Hermanson was crazy impressive. I mean, that's a fight that I don't think a lot of people thought that he was going to be able to pull off. And not only did he pull it off, but he finished the guy, a guy that is very difficult to finish, a guy with a lot of experience. So I think Cesar Ferreira, it's probably going to be difficult for him to get a finish here because Theodoro is very talented and he is quite capable with his defense. But I can see Ferreira just smothering him. We haven't seen Theodoro on the defensive in the grappling much, and I think that Mutanch is going to do that here. And as long as he can do it without getting caught on the way in, I think there's a really good chance that he not only doesn't get caught, but that he smothers Theodoro and wins a decision. So my pick is going to be Cesar Ferreira. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Sam Cecilia, who is 15-7, taking on Gavin Tucker, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Cecilia minus 130 to come back on Tucker minus 110, virtually a pick'em type of fight with a slight lean towards Cecilia. And a lot of that was based on, I think, overall quality opponents, honestly, more so than anything. Because skill set, these guys actually match up fairly well together. So I think it is a true pick'em, but where the line is right now, I do think it's fair, and it's probably a little bit better because of the potential that Tucker has. So right now over five dimes is Tucker minus 160. The comeback in Cecilia is plus 140. So overall, the action coming in on Tucker, more people believe that he is a prospect that could potentially come in his UFC debut and beat a pretty solid fighter. Now, I know Sam has lost, sincerely has lost his last couple fights, so he really needs a win here to get back on track. And the way what the UFC is doing right now with the UFC cuts, the recent cuts that they've made, I mean, it wouldn't be shocker to see Sam Cecilia cut if he loses this fight. So he's fighting essentially for his UFC career right now to stay on the roster spot probably. So he needs a win relatively bad. Now, with that, I do think that Cecilia does have a lot of potential. I mean, across the board with his power, he's got good knockout power. He's got a good wrestling game. I mean, that's his background. That's what he does best is actually take fighters down. He's got some nasty ground and pound. We've seen that in the past as well. So, and he's getting better. I mean, he does definitely show some improvements. I know it was a tough loss to Benitez. Brian and I actually picked and bet Benitez over Cecilia in that fight. So we kind of expected that. Benitez was just a little bit underrated. So that was a tough loss, but I think it was a loss. Benitez is actually pretty good, so it's not a horrible loss. And then again, against the Korean Superboy, come on. I mean, we also saw the ability there. So those aren't necessarily bad losses for Sam, but he's facing another promising young fighter here. I mean, age 30, not all that young, but again, MMA career, MMA overall, his record, you know, from fights, he is young in a lot of areas. And in fact, that's the question mark I have around Tucker. A lot like we were just talking about with Zahabi, how he hasn't really been tested throughout his career. This is by far the toughest test of Tucker's career. So he's stepping in here facing a solid veteran in Sam Cecilia that has a lot of power, that has wrestling to go along with it. That's not going to be an easy out. But from what I've seen from Tucker so far, the guy does have some talent. I mean, he's good everywhere as well. Now, the one question mark that I'm going to have here is how good does his wrestling match up with Sam's? Now, I think Tucker's wrestling is actually not bad. From what I've seen, it's actually pretty good. But is he going to be stuck on his back here against Cecilia and have to struggle getting back up? I mean, that's a question mark that I'm kind of unsure of right now. But from what I've seen, I think Tucker can sprawl and brawl well enough to keep this fight upright. And if he does, I think he is going to be more of the dangerous fighter of the two. Now, again, Sam does have a lot of power, but I think technically speaking, I like the variety that Tucker throws. I mean, he mixes things up very well on the feet. He's got knockout power, again, and accuracy to go along with it. I think he can probably clip Sam's chin. That's one weakness that I think he has in his game as well, where Tucker, he hasn't been knocked out yet. Again, he hasn't been tested like Sam's going to test him, but I do trust Tucker's chin a little bit more. And if this does stay upright, I think Tucker overall in his attack is going to be a little bit more effective. So I am going to go with the public here, the overall early action coming in on Tucker. I do think that he's promising enough and he's showed enough thus far on tape to make his UFC debut a successful one against Cecilia. Now, I mean, this is, again, an important fight for Sam. I think he's going to show up and fight here, but I think Tucker's going to edge him out. Could be a very competitive battle, could end really with one punch either way or even a choke either way here. But if so, I think that, again, Tucker's just a little bit better probably overall as far as the submission game goes, and I think he's going to be able to outstrike Sam a little bit on the feet as well. So I'll pick Tucker to win this fight. Again, another fight that you probably have to approach with a little bit of caution because we really need to see Tucker fight against a solid opponent, and he's going to get that here.
Yeah, this isn't exactly a walk in the park for Gavin Tucker's UFC debut, but I do think it's a very winnable fight. Sam Cecilia's gritty. He is a capable fighter. He has a lot of power, but he's also really flawed. He doesn't have the greatest defense, and if Tucker can connect with something solid, I think Cecilia will definitely go down. And he doesn't have the greatest submission defense. We've seen Cecilia have a little bit of trouble when put on his back by superior opponents. So if Gavin Tucker can either get Sam Cecilia down or just connect with something heavy, then I think this is a very winnable fight. The main thing Tucker doesn't want to do is get into a slugfest. Sam Cecilia loves to brawl, and he has a lot of power, and he swings from the hip with everything he's got. So if Tucker gets into a brawl, then that just raises the odds that any random haymaker could put his lights out. So if Tucker can force this into a more technical battle, then I think he's going to have a really good chance. Tucker is well-rounded. He has 4 submissions, 4 knockouts. So if he wants to take this fight to the ground, I think that he'll have some success. And on the feet, I do think that he is going to be pretty capable here as well. I mean, this is a kid that's been training in the martial arts since he was a teenager, and he's 30 years old now, finally making his UFC debut with a 9-0 record. As Nick mentioned, he's not quite tested against an elite fighter. He doesn't really have any huge quality wins so far, but I do think that UFC believes in him. I mean, they wouldn't be putting him this deep on the card for his UFC debut if they didn't think that he was capable of going out there and putting on a good performance. So as long as he isn't kind of shied away by the bright lights of the octagon, then I think that Gavin Tucker goes in and makes an example out of Sam Cecilia. I think he can definitely not just win, but finish Cecilia. Cecilia has been on a tough little run here. He's got two straight losses, and I think Tucker can make it three. So my pick is going to be Gavin Tucker. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Johnny Hendricks, who is 17-5, taking on Hector Lombard, who is 34-6-1 with two no contests. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Tough, tough fight, man. I mean, both these guys are on really in a weird spot of their careers. I open this fight exactly a pick 'em, minus 120 either way, and we'll let you guys out there decide which way it goes because it's tough. I mean, it really is. Lombard is right now favored at minus 150, the comeback on Hendricks plus 130. So overall, bets coming in on Lombard, I kind of get it, but at the same time, again, I don't know if I trust Lombard like I used to, obviously, because he showed some really declined signs, honestly, if you look at it. He's coming back up to 185 pounds, which is great, but he did suffer a loss last time to Dan Henderson in a crazy fight, and that was 185 pounds as well. So he dropped down 170 pounds. He looked like a beast. I thought he was going to potentially challenge for a title and maybe win that title. That's how much skill Lombard has. But Magny, that fight really, I think, showed that he does have some issues right now, especially with everything with USADA stepping in there. I mean, the UFC has changed a little bit, and Lombard has suffered, I think, a little bit because of that. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not going to speculate anything that I don't know. But that being said, I mean, he just hasn't looked really good in his last couple of performances. I mean, Magny, he looked good early on in that fight. Obviously, he had Magny in trouble, but Magny was able to beat him. And then, again, Dan Henderson beating him as well. I mean, the way he went about that was pretty impressive too. So I think that Lombard's slowing down. I mean, he's always had a little bit of cardio issues, but it's really shown recently and the type of fights that he's been in. So he's coming off two back-to-back losses and head-scratcher type of losses, honestly. And not to mention that about Johnny Hendricks, I mean, you could pretty much put him in a lot of the same boat. Now, a little bit different. I mean, I thought he beat Magny in his last fight, to be honest with you. I thought he should have got a pretty competitive decision win. It was a lackluster performance, to say the least. But, you know, I thought he should have won that, and that probably would have changed the complexion on this fight or his thoughts a little bit, even with that. But again, lackluster, not one of his best performances. He hasn't looked really good for a while, honestly. So there's some things going on with Hendricks. I mean, he's definitely hit that decline spot in a lot of ways. His loss to Gaslam, I guess, is to be expected again. So he's had a couple of tough losses against quality competition, but Hendricks just hasn't looked like the guy that was wearing that strap recently. So a lot of question marks since he's left Team Takedown, honestly. And there's, I mean, a lot of stuff to be unanswered still. So we'll see. This is a big fight for both guys, 185 pounds for Hendricks. We'll see if this is a good division for him. Obviously, Lombard has the experience fighting it this way a little bit more. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Lombard, but these guys have a lot of similarities. I could see either guy knocking the other person out. I mean, both of them have outstanding knockout power. I think that more so Lombard is the better striker, more effective striker, usually on the feet than Hendricks. He can mix things up a little bit better, and he can land that devastating knockout punch, but you can't count Hendricks out. Now, it's been some time that Hendricks has looked great and devastating on the feet, but that being said, he still has it in his back pocket, especially with the declining age 39 type of Lombard. So you never know there either. Top position is going to be interesting here as well. I mean, if you look at Lombard with his judo ability, he's been able to get top position on some of the elite fighters out there. I mean, to me, one of his most impressive wins in the UFC was against Jake Shields, how he was able to ragdoll Shields. I've never seen anybody do that to Shields, so impressive to say the least. But again, that was a welterweight. He looked really good back then, and he hasn't really looked that good since. So we'll see what happens. And Hendricks, at the same time, he hasn't looked his best either. So I think what can happen here, if Lombard's not careful, Hendricks should maybe start taking over and winning late in round two or in winning round three and maybe edge out the cards if it even goes that long. But these guys are definitely susceptible to being finished before that. So we'll see how it plays out. I guess I have to lean a little bit more towards Lombard because I do think that he is a little bit more dangerous, especially early on in this fight on the feet. But not confident. This is a pure toss-up type of fight to me. I just can't trust either one of these guys right now at all. So hopefully it's a good fight and we're all entertained, but man, I don't know. Head scratcher. I lean a little bit more towards Lombard.
I completely agree that this is a tricky fight, but man, Hector Lombard does have way more experience in the middleweight division. I mean, this is a guy that was the middleweight champion of Bellator. He spent most of his career in the middleweight division as an undersized middleweight and then dropped down to the welterweight division when that didn't work out in his initial UFC run. Now, both guys are fighting at middleweight again. Neither guy has really enjoyed the weight cut to welterweight. Hendricks especially, he has had so many issues with the weight cut to 170 pounds, especially as he's gotten older. It's just getting more and more brutal until the UFC basically forced his hand and told him that he had to move up to middleweight because he missed weight again. So Johnny Hendricks, I have not been impressed with him at all lately. He has been in a steep, steep decline. I mean, this is a guy that was at one point probably the most feared welterweight on the planet at about the time where he had that crazy close decision against George St. Pierre that honestly could have and probably should have gone his way. And then winning the title from Robbie Lawler the first time, or against Robbie Lawler the first time, the vacant title. And that was there's just when Johnny Hendricks was at his absolute best. But ever since then, he has just been in a sharp decline. You go back and watch his fights. The second Robbie Lawler fight, he basically was just leaning against him in the fence, looking for takedowns, just not engaging. The Matt Brown victory, he basically just took him down and laid on him for three rounds. Stephen Thompson absolutely brutalized him. And then Kelvin Gastelum completely outworked him. And Neil Magny, even though Hendricks was taking him down, again, he was just laying on him, and he allowed Magny to be active enough off of his back that the judges decided to side with him. So Hendricks just has not been dangerous. What happened to that guy with the killer left hand that if it connected with anybody, they were in huge trouble? Like, that guy has not existed in a long, long time. If he comes out here and just looks to wrestle against Hector Lombard, I think he's going to be in huge trouble. Lombard just has massive power, and I think that he can do some damage to Hendricks on the feet. And Lombard's wrestling is pretty good. I mean, he comes from that Olympic judo background for Cuba, and he's tossed around some really talented grapplers in the past. Very few have been able to get him on his back and keep him there. So unless Hendricks is really looking to exchange on the feet, I don't know if he's going to have a lot of success against Lombard. Lombard's chin is definitely the worst of the two. He had a really rough performance against Dan Henderson where he got hurt, then hurt Henderson, and then Henderson just massacred him with that elbow. So Lombard's chin is starting to go. He's getting older. So if Hendricks does still have that power in the left hand and he connects, then there's a decent chance he can pull this out, but we just haven't seen it. You got to show me that you're capable of it still. And I just don't know if he just has much trust or faith in his stand up anymore. And, Hector Lombard, he definitely is still a capable striker. You saw that even in the Henderson loss. I mean, he connected and had Henderson in huge trouble. So I still think that Lombard can be a threat on the feet. I think Lombard can be a threat on the ground with the judo and top position. And as long as Lombard doesn't gas too badly, I think that he wins this fight. So my pick is going to be Hector Lombard as well. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a heavyweight showcase between Derek Lewis, who is 17-4 with one no contest, and Travis Brown, who is 18-5-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Brown -125, the comeback on Lewis -115, another virtual pick'em type of spot with a slight lean towards Brown. The public immediately, the early action flipped the line, and everybody came in on Lewis, and Lewis was favored there for a few days. Now it's back to exactly a pick'em at fivedimes.eu. It's Lewis -110, Brown -110, exactly. So more action coming back in on Brown, and obviously the popular fighter right now out of these guys is Lewis. I mean, pardon the pun, but he is a beast. I mean, he's looked great at times in the UFC, especially what he does best, getting top position and just destroying people on the ground. Once he does, you do not want this guy on top of you dropping bombs. I mean, that is a formula for disaster. So Brown's obviously going to want to avoid that. But overall, Lewis has shown some improvements on the feet. He definitely has some knockout power, even standing, but not that impressive. I think, honestly, Lewis is a little bit overrated. He's tough as nails. he definitely brings it. His cardio is actually okay. There's a lot of good things to like about Lewis as a heavyweight. There's no doubt. He's a fun guy to watch. I like his social media style, everything about him. I mean, I understand why the fans have kind of taken a liking to him, but if you really look at his fighting style, I mean, he is slightly overrated. The guy doesn't have great stand up. He's hittable. He's been knocked out. His wrestling is okay. He can be put on his back, but he does have decent takedown defense as well. So it's just his mindset and his toughness, gets him through a lot of times. You cannot let this guy like hang around in a fight. And it's hard to finish him too. So that's the tough part, because if you start getting tired, he's going to take advantage of it and he's going to beat you. I mean, that's what he does. Look at his last fight against Abdurakhimov. He was losing that fight, clearly losing that fight. Abdurakhimov got tired and Lewis took over and ended up finishing him. So Lewis wasn't really happy with his performance either, but it was to be kind of expected. It's really strange because, like I said, Lewis does have decent takedown defense, but he can be put on his back. So in this matchup against Brown needs a matchup like this to actually get him back to, I think, some credibility and amongst respect level in the heavyweight division. Because at one time, I mean, Brown was kind of climbing towards obviously a title shot. We all knew that. He had a lot of ability on the feet. I mean, the guy has length, he has skill, and he knows how to use it in most cases. He has those devastating elbows up against the cage that he can utilize when people try to take him down. He has really good takedown defense, so it's not easy to get Brown on the ground and control him on the ground either. And he's basically able to stand up in most cases against most heavyweights and outstrike him and basically knock people out. But he's shown signs of decline, and that's, I think, why everybody's kind of fading him, or at least early on we're fading him here in this spot. Because if you look at it, I mean, his loss to Verdum in his last fight wasn't really surprising, especially since we saw that fight play out the first time, and it was kind of a surprise. A lot of people were banking on Brown winning against Verdum the first fight, but Verdum showed up and he looked great. So Brown suffered that loss, but even in his last matchup against Verdum, clearly lost that fight. Against Velasquez, just got dominated. I mean, Velasquez looked great in that fight though too, so credit to him. But suffering back-to-back losses, and then overall I think he's lost three out of his last four fights. I mean, he's not trending in the right direction. Brown definitely is on the wrong side of good in the UFC right now. So this is a big spot for him to come back, get a little bit of credibility back, and still kind of save face and say, hey, I'm here. I mean, I'm going to beat the mid to upper tier guys. You know, I think he's capable of doing that still. He needs to get, again, his head focused, and he needs to kind of show up and do what he does best. And that's kind of show off his versatile striking game. I mean, his kicks can be very effective if he utilizes them right, and his reach can be as well. And his takedown defense, again, is up to par in most cases. So I think this is a difficult fight for Lewis, because everywhere that you match these guys up, Brown is better. Brown is the better striker. Brown is the better wrestler in this spot here. Brown is a better submission fighter in this spot here. So really, in my opinion, the only way Lewis wins this is if he lands a big bomb on the feet, which is possible. I mean, Brown can be knocked out. We know he's been rocked and knocked out before. Or if he does get top position on Brown. But I don't think he's going to get the top position, so it limits you even more. And I think Brown can win this fight by knockout on the feet. I think Brown can win this fight on the ground as well. Lewis, his sub-defense is pretty good. I mean, it's amazing really how tough this guy is and how he manages to scramble up out of bad spots. So it's not going to be easy for Brown on the ground, but I think Brown can get him down. And if Brown gets Lewis down, he could beat him on the ground as well. So I like Brown's chances on the ground. I like his chances standing up as well. He's just a better fighter, even though he's had some bad performances recently. So I'm going to go with Brown. I think that he is going to show back up here. I think he's going to put on a somewhat impressive performance, and he's going to beat Lewis. So that's my pick here. I'm pretty confident that it happens that way. Again, not underestimating Lewis, but I just think that Brown's clearly the better fighter. So we'll see what happens. I mean, this line's still staying at a pick 'em. A lot of support and a lot of people believe that this is going to be an easy fight for Lewis. I'm not one of them. So I think Brown wins, and I'm going to pick him to do so.
One thing you have to put into context here is who these guys were facing when they were having bad performances. Yeah, Travis Brown hasn't looked the greatest, but he was facing Cain Velasquez and then Fabricio Werdum twice. Meanwhile, Derek Lewis has been going out there and having pretty ugly fights against Roy Nelson, against Shamil Abdurakhimov. So honestly, I think what's going to happen here is Travis Brown is going to have a nice little bounce back performance. Derek Lewis is not a huge threat on the feet. He does have some power, but he does not have great technique. He is just a big, strong guy that wings some punches on the feet. I mean, he is really not a major threat. His stand-up is improving a little bit. He does throw a decent kick. He showcased some nice flexibility, but, I mean, his stand-up is nowhere near as good as Travis Brown's. And on the ground, that's where Lewis has pretty much always thrived. He gets top position, and then he just absolutely mauls people on the canvas and picks up TKO victories or knockout victories. I don't see him being able to get Travis Brown on his back and then pummeling him. Travis Brown has, against people that have better wrestling than Derek Lewis, he's been the guy that got top position, like in the Brandon Schaub fight. So what I see happening here is, even though that Brown has not performed well, I think he goes out there and he connects with some really nasty shots out of range from Lewis on the feet and eventually just knocks Lewis out. I don't think Lewis has a great chin. You saw the fact that he did get knocked out by Matt Mitrione and Sean Jordan, two guys that aren't even in the UFC anymore. And I expect Travis Brown to go out there and take care of business on Sunday night. I really do. So Derek Lewis is a dangerous fighter, but I think Travis Brown matches up really, really favorably with him. So I'm picking Travis Brown as well. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 105. We'll be releasing our premium plays following the weigh-ins on Saturday. So stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.